At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. A bill that aims to fix the troubled Dallas Police and Fire Pension Fund took a big step forward today at the Texas Capitol. The Senate State Affairs Committee voted to advance the bill to the Senate floor. The State House also will have to vote to approve the Senate version of the bill. Dallas City officials have been working with police and fire associations and state lawmakers to hammer out a deal. Because of risky investments and overly generous benefits, the retirement fund for first responders could run out of money in 10 years without a legislative fix. As state lawmakers work to address the Dallas Pension Fund, they face a looming deadline. May 29th is when they're supposed to wrap up their work for this legislative session. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is threatening to force a special session in order to pass a so-called bathroom bill and legislation regarding property tax rates. House Speaker Joe Strauss says lawmakers can avoid a special session. One thing the Texas legislature must agree on: passing a budget. Ross Ramsey is executive director of the Texas Tribune. He told Public Radio's Texas Standard that lawmakers are making progress on the state budget.
I think they're almost ready. You know, the House passes a version, the Senate passes a version. There are always big differences either in the mathematics of the thing, you know, you spent more money than I did, or in the philosophy of the thing. You know, they have different approaches, for example, to how they're going to fund higher education in Texas. But I think that the conference committee of 5 members from the Senate and 5 members from the House assigned to negotiate and iron out those differences is pretty close to an answer and really just waiting for a signal from the adults table on how to proceed.
That was Ross Ramsey, executive editor of the Texas Tribune. About 50 companies from Starbucks to Domino's Pizza are prepared to offer 1,700 jobs to young people in Dallas tomorrow. The 100,000 Opportunities Initiative is a coalition of national employers and social service organizations, and it's hosting its first ever Dallas Opportunity Fair at the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center in downtown. John Kelly is public policy executive at Starbucks, which leads the coalition. He says all of the participating companies believe in the same thing.
And that is a belief that the nearly 5 million young people in the United States who are out of school, out of work, or at risk, that they all share one thing in common, that if given an opportunity, they can be successful. And that the employers represent a small fraction of the more than 8 million jobs that are available, and we're simply trying to connect the dots.
In Dallas, nearly 13% of local 16 to 24-year-olds aren't in school and don't have a job. That's about 109,000 people, giving Dallas one of the country's highest youth unemployment rates. Kelly says in previous fairs, nearly two-thirds of the attendees left with at least one job offer. The fair also provides mentoring and job readiness training. To register, visit 100kopportunities.org/Dallas. Fans of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me know comedian Paula Poundstone as regular panelist on the show. In her new book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, Poundstone tries everything from ballroom dancing to driving a Lamborghini to discover the secret to happiness. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with the comedian about one thing that didn't make her happier: Facebook.
They have done studies that show people who go on Facebook a lot tend to be depressed because it is a 24-hour-a-day holiday letter drip of everybody's best and most, and look how beautiful my children are, and look, we went skiing in Switzerland. I mean, every time I look at somebody else's thing of their happy family vacation, all I can think is, geez, when my son was expelled, we should have gone somewhere. And even though intellectually we all know that's what we're looking at, and we do it ourselves, we put up the best and the happiest and the brightest and the most wonderful, still, when you're looking at it, it bums you out because you feel like, oh, you know, I'm not as good, or I'm not as happy, or I'm not as blah. So any kind of social networking is not good for your emotional well-being. What I started doing right away as soon as I got the Facebook thing was checking for those ridiculous numbers. I say, you know, in the old days, you know, I would just do something. But now I had to check to see if I did it, I guess, and if other people cared that I did it. It's not healthy.
Paula Poundstone performs Friday at the Majestic Theater in Dallas. And a new NPR podcast, Live from the Poundstone Institute, debuts July 8th. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can listen to the podcast at think.kera.org. African-American women have worn head wraps for hundreds of years. Some wear them for religious or cultural purposes, others for fashion. Each week in the Art and Seek series, Artist Spotlight, we follow the personal journey of a North Texas creative. This week, Hadi Mwagdi connects with the designer to learn how the garb went from statements of oppression to statements of power.
32-year-old Chesley Antoinette knows working three jobs is the life of an adjunct professor.
I teach down the road at Mountain View face-to-face, and then I teach online for both Tarrant County and Corsicana.
Despite how busy she stays, she makes the most of it.
Online teaching allows me to work from home, but then allows me to balance out making artwork simultaneously.
Her small two-bedroom house in Oak Cliff doubles as an art studio. And after spending 5 minutes in the space, it's clear her artwork does not take a backseat to teaching.
So we are in the front part of the house, which is traditionally the living room. So here, you know, I've got a couple of tables, a couple of sewing machines, some headpieces scattered around, like on the mantle.
She has supplies, equipment, and art in the dining room and even the hallway.
And then there's more of the pieces in this room, which is, I call my junk room because it's where I can just throw stuff in here.
Antoinette uses a drill press, a bandsaw, and tons of knickknacks to design and create wearable art. Her specialty? Headpieces. And these works would stand out at any Sunday morning church service. I mean, they're basically small sculptures crafted from found and recycled materials.
This one's not finished, still in progress, but these are like some Lego pieces, and then we've got some zip ties. And then we have, I'm not sure exactly what this rubber, plastic, black, shiny material is.
The piece is almost alien. It's black and neon green. Hundreds of Legos dangle from it, and it's going to be pretty large. She's planning to add nylon seatbelt material to the piece in order to create a sort of turban. But her next project will be a little bit different. It's called Heart of the Head Wrap. And it's inspired by a Louisiana law requiring free and enslaved women of color to wear head wraps, often referred to as tignons. The law was created by a Spanish governor in 1786.
I think he wanted to kind of put his stamp on how he regarded how women of color should be perceived, which is as a lesser person.
That's Whitney Stewart. Stewart's a historian who studies African-American material culture at the University of Texas at Dallas. She says head wraps were worn across the globe. This law tried to make the tignon a sign of slavery, almost like a prison uniform. But women were able to reclaim the head wrap for their own purposes.
Women would put feathers, they would put pearls, they would make sure that their head wrap went perfectly with their dress. They became kind of art pieces.
Instead of stigmatizing women of color, head wraps helped them to show off their fashion sense and made them seem more worldly in the international city of New Orleans.
That really allowed them room and space to kind of gain a little bit of power back from that law.
Few know this history. Usually, Stewart says head wraps in North America are often tied to the antebellum South and the mammy caricature. Antoinette hopes to change this. In June, she'll use grants from Dallas's Office of Cultural Affairs and the Nasher Sculpture Center to host workshops at community centers and churches. At those workshops, she'll tell women about Louisiana's law, and she's planning to share her own head wrap techniques.
Whomever wants to participate can, and my goal is to try and reach 150 women and girls, so to give away 150 scarves.
The project doesn't end there, though. After the workshop, Antoinette invites participants to a photo shoot. She wants to recreate 18th century paintings using modern women of color in head wraps.
We try and embody, you know, who these women were, you know, and perhaps walk away with feeling more empowered, not only with the history, but also how you can approach the head wrap.
Turning an old symbol of slavery into a point of pride. Hadi Mawagdi, KERA News.
A tornado watch is in effect for the listening area until 10 tonight. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies this evening. Chances for storms, some might be severe, with low around 72. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.